I see two of you.
Two of me.
I see two of you. I see two Jamies.
That's weird. I see two of you.
Oh, my goodness.
So this is all kinds of strange. There's multiplicity situation going on.
This might be a very special episode of Deep in Bear Country.
It's all about your perspective and your sense of paradigm.
I have to say that I have been obsessing over duplicates and doubles because of this book, because I have been like madly trying to research the origin of the name Delaware because of the Delaware River.
Right, yes. Bending over backwards to make a pun, also delving deep into Bear Country history, which I know is one of your favorite topics.
Well, I think it's quite clear that this book is very, very loose as far as the plot goes, but man, the history of Bear Country.
Well, I mean, I'm sure we'll get into it. It's national treasure, like 10 years yes. earlier. I was reading it, and my wife was in the room, and all of a sudden I said, I think this book is kind of like National Treasure. And then like the next chapter was like, no, it's 100%.
It is 100% National Treasure. What a weird plot that they then kind of just like brush under the rug and forget about.
And then it just stops. Like, it's such right. a, like, oh man. Okay, I'm very excited to talk about this book with you because I think it is a masterpiece.
Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I'm your host, Phil Gonzalez, and everyone stop what you're doing right now. Just stop what you're doing. Go to your computer, go to your phone, do whatever you need to do, and pick up a copy of this week's book, The Berenstain Bears, The Perfect Crime, parentheses, almost close parentheses, because this book just knocked me over. You just cannot imagine. From page one, this book knocked me over. I mean, it has everything. It has the bear detectives. It has theft. It has Ralph Ripoff. It has Bear Country history, and it has a plot that builds and builds and then gets dropped like a hot potato in time for the last chapter. It is kind of the quintessential Berenstain Bears chapter book. The only thing it doesn't have is a weird love story, but in place of that, it has the return of Bear Country's worst teacher in history. It's kind of got a little bit of everything. Of course, it's too much for me to handle. Of course, I could not possibly deal with this book all by myself. I would just sit here sweating and not being able to talk about it. So in order to help me just deal with the amazing book that is The Berenstain Bears, The Perfect Crime, parentheses, almost close parentheses, I have brought back a guest who has not been on the show for almost a year. I think we are a week shy of 1 year. You last met him in episode 106, The Wheelchair Commando. He is the author of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles blog, Cowablogga. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back to the show, Jamie Tyler. Hello.
Thank you, Phil. I'm really excited to be here. Really excited to be talking about this book. And before we do anything else, I want to wish you a happy Bear Country Independence Day.
Thank you so much. You know, it would have been perfect if this episode had fallen in July.
Well, we'll get into it, but I was looking at it, I was like, I think it's like ill-defined, but I think it's somewhere in June is where Bear Country Independence Day is.
Well, it certainly isn't. Okay, well, we'll talk. Okay.
Yes.
Well, my goodness. This book blows the lid off of Bear Country history. We already know that Bear Country is kind of America.
Right.
But only kind of.
It's parallel America where instead of people, it's bears. But everyone is still the same. They're just bears.
Kind of. But
kind of, yes.
This book gives us more and more hints that timeline-wise, it's way off.
Sure.
We are existing in a world where, I mean, we know that, like, the world is now divided up among, they discussed, like, polar bear land again in this book. Like, we know that there are, politically, the world is now divided up in ways that our world cannot possibly be, because we deal with one species, the Berenstain Bears. Bear Country, Bear World deals with multiple species. So, oh my goodness, this book. Jamie, please, first of all, how have you been?
I've been great. So, as listeners might remember, I'm a elementary school teacher, so I have just entered into summer vacation. So I am doing A-OK. And then I read this book, and I'm doing fantastic.
Yeah, you started writing to me about this book. You're like, oh my goodness. And I realized that you were on like page two.
Yes. No, the first, literally the first paragraph, which is also the first page on the Kindle version of this, is just, I was just like, so I highlight stuff I find interesting. Uh-huh. And this whole first page is highlighted because yes. It's incredible.
Yeah, it brings up so much. Well, why don't you let our listeners know like what is going on in Bear Country?
So we are coming up on the Bear Country Independence Day celebration. And not only is it Bear Country Independence Day, it's the bicentennial.
The bicentennial. And that's where that's like my first big important thing, because if it is the bicentennial and this book came out in it's like 94 originally.
Right.
That means that their bicentennial is about 15 years or so,
12 years, or no, wait.
I tried to do the math.
Yes, I guess 18 years later.
18 years. It's 18 years off of our bicentennial, which is, that's a huge difference.
Yeah, that's a pretty significant change. Also, they are the first president of Bear Country, as we'll learn in great detail, is named George Grissington.
Yes.
Which... George is you know pretty close, but Grissington and Washington are that's a stretch even as like far as the bear puns go.
Right, but so you have George Grissington, but then you also have Benjamin Franklin.
Oh, yes, Benjamin Franklin, who is being represented in the parade by everyone's favorite Grismire.
Yes. So my question is, the way the parade is shown is you have George Grissington in the front with a saber, and you have Benjamin Franklin right behind him holding a flag.
Right.
Now, if you look at the flag of Bear Country does not have 50 stars.
Oh, man, it's got a picture of a bear on it.
Now, this may, of course, be the revolutionary
flag. Sure, sure, yes.
But it's got a bear where this like where stars would be.
It also has 1, 2, 3, has 7 stripes on it.
All right.
So, yeah, so we're learning all kinds. So the 7 original colonies of Bear Country with a picture of a bear instead of stars.
And I can only assume that that means that they separated off originally. They declared their independence. We don't know from whom.
Right, yes.
But exactly. I have to assume they were declaring their independence from other animals.
Sure. Or Phil, what if it was people?
Oh.
Just, we're making wild speculations here. And
well, I can only assume because they use a bear as their symbol.
Right.
Like this is independence for bears.
But from bears, from something. Yeah.
Yes. I'm not going to lie and say an episode. I would do an entire series based on this first page alone.
A whole second podcast.
Right. Just on the opening salvo of the Berenstain Bears, The Perfect Crime Almost.
The people's history of Bear Country.
It's told by the winners.
Yes.
And the winners are the bears. So, yeah, so we're talking about the bicentennial, and so it is a really big deal for Bear Country.
Right. And one of the things that they're doing, so Bear Town, that's correct, right? That's correct. Bear Town is where the Cubs and all our characters live.
Yes.
It's Bear Town.
Right.
But apparently, so Bear Town is preparing their festivities and so forth. And as kind of an ancillary side note to this, the Cubs, their principal comes back to Bear Country School. It's like, we've got to clean up everything because he went to a training. And
right.
So it's time to clean up the act and clear off all the bulletin boards, which leads to my second favorite part of this book. My first favorite part being, of course, all of it. But my second favorite part is they have this, it's this, clearly the Berenstains either were involved or had someone who was involved with them in education, because there's such a specific surrealist joke about teachers' lounges in this book that blew my mind.
Yeah, like there's this sudden wry observational humor.
Yes. Well, yeah, and it's like, so the Cubs have been tasked, because child labor is A-OK in Bear Country, have been tasked with clearing off all the billboards, and then they're like, oh, also go into the teacher's lounge. And they go in and they're like, oh, we're in the teacher's lounge, which, of course, for every child is like forbidden territory, when in reality, they're typically boring rest areas.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so they go in there and they start clearing off the bulletin board, and they realize that there's stuff that's going back decades, centuries. And then they realize, oh, look, here's something, a notice that was written by George Grissington. Meaning that there's been a thing on this bulletin board for 200 years.
And it says, the description of the teacher's lounge is, it was a strange place, a strange combination of old and new, of antique and modern. There were modern tables and chairs, a coffee maker, snack and soda machines, but the room itself was anything but modern.
Yeah. And it's and then Fred just drops this, that it's the original town meeting room for all of Beartown. Like, this is like, yeah. Like, this is the oldest building in Beartown.
Now, I don't know like what your school was like growing up. I don't know like how new it was or anything, but my high school, my high school doesn't stand on the original place where the high school started. If you go to you could go visit the old high school, which had been sort of turned into administrative buildings.
Mm-hmm.
But if you went into the like no people allowed section, like the condemned section of this old building, you could stand in areas that are A, dangerous to stand in, but also were like the original meeting halls.
Oh, wow.
Of the residents of the area from like 100 years.
That is crazy. No, that was the thing, is that this whole thing just reads as absurdist to me, because all the schools I went to were built in the 60s.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, our main high school was, of course, built like in the 60s or 70s. But you could go to visit this like just busted up old building. So this sort of like, I was like, I get like, it almost seems like this one meeting room was built and then Bear Town sort of expanded around it.
Right. So it starts that they're peeling off all these So they're peeling off all these bulletin boards and they're like, oh, look, here are all these crazy things, but all these adults when they were kids. And they're like, that's cool. And then they keep going and going. And it's when they mention that they found something about General Ulysses S. Bear. I was like, oh, that's when it like sunk in. Like, oh, they're going to go all the way back. They're going to go. Yep. they're going to keep going, peeling until they find something. I was not prepared for it to be something that was signed by George Grissington. But
what's funny, though, is that they're peeling off these notices and they're like, soon famous names popped up. Horace Grizzly, the great journalist, to give a lecture. General Ulysses S. Bear would talk about military strategy during the war between the clans. And first of all, I'm like, thank you for referencing the war between the clans again, because that's not been brought up in a while. Second, weren't most of these things worth like hanging on to? Like, they're tearing. If I came across a bulletin board that had something by Ulysses S. Grant on it, I'd be like, well, this is also valuable.
Right. Well, no, that's, I mean, again, that's the absurdist and thing that I think is like so tied into. So at my school's only been up for about 6 years. We're a relatively new school building, but our teacher lounge has stuff on the bulletin board that, no joke, Phil, has been there since we opened.
I believe it.
And so, like, so there's this idea of, like, once something gets put on a bulletin board, it never goes away. And so so there's this idea of, like, so if you have a school that's been there since the beginning of, you know, Bear Country, stuff is going to be up on there until now. Like, it's this idea of, like, the, like, inescapable gravity of bulletin boards.
Yes. Which also is, like, it's not actually a bulletin board. When you get down to it, it's like a piece of wood.
Right. Right. Well, because it's before we had the technology.
Yeah.
For.
And, of course, and they're all, like, imagining, like, all these great things happening. And you see, like, flags. So you see this flag that I assume is from the war between the clans, which is Bear Country's their Civil War XP. It's instead of like the North and the South, it was the Grizzlies versus the Bears versus the Grizzlies. So you see a flag that maybe it's their version of the Confederate flag.
It's just an angry bear.
Yep, in a circle. And I'm like, oh my God, I love Bear Country history so much.
And you'll notice that on the Bear Country flag, it's a happy bear.
It's so, a happy bear.
So it's the happy bears versus the angry bears.
Yeah, which is, you know, you could probably, you can reduce the Civil War to that.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I'm not going to get into that here, but yes.
The happy people versus the angry people. All right. So yeah, so they find this notice signed by General George Grissington.
Right. And then, of course, as you already alluded to, everyone's favorite teacher returns, Mr. Dweebish.
So Mr. Dweebish, he's popped up a couple of times, but he was featured in The Red-Handed Thief. And The Red-Handed Thief is the book where Mr. Dweebish framed a student for theft in order to prove a point about something.
Right. Like, I was trying to remember. I meant to do my due diligence and go back and listen to that episode because I haven't read the book. I've read two of these books, the two that I've done with you. But I couldn't remember like what, because I know that has something to do with like, so we'll get into later. This book ends up being some kind of weird morality story about the criminal justice system that doesn't even make sense.
No, it makes no sense.
Once you get to the end of it. So, but that book had something to say about the same thing, right? Wasn't it also kind of an innocent until proven guilty?
Yeah. So he was trying to show that like we jump to conclusions. We make assumptions about who is innocent and guilty based on like what people are like, when in fact it could have been anybody. And he was stealing stuff out of the lockers. But at the end of the day, he disproves his own theory because it was a setup. Like, that doesn't prove anything.
Right.
Like, it was a setup. And we know that he got Too Tall blamed for the theft.
Right.
But Too Tall is a thief. Like, we know that Too Tall's a thief. Like, that wasn't a leap to make.
Right. Well, and I know Mr. Dweebish has interesting ideas on anarchy and that kind of thing. So
yes, definitely.
Like, and then it's crazy that this whole other experience happened, and it's like no one remembers why he left in the first place. It's like
he didn't leave; he was asked to leave.
Yes, and so when he comes back, all the cubs are stoked because they love Mr. Dweebish for reasons that escape me.
Yeah,
so they show him that what they found, and he loses his mind because of course he does, because this is an incredible artifact that they found.
Right, and they want to get it authenticated, but Dweebish's document expert friend, who works at Big Bear University with him, is up in Polar Bear City authenticating some letters of Admiral Barry's that were recently found buried near the Northern Pole. Now, here's a few things. We have another mention of Polar Bear City, which is okay. We know that there is another race of bears living in the north. We have now been introduced to the concept of Admiral Barry. Who is that supposed to be?
I was gonna wonder. I'm assuming it must be somebody. If it was the Northern Pole, it might be like some kind of like naturalist explorer. It was not a name that like leapt out to me as being anybody.
Yeah.
I could not make a one-to-one analog as I normally can with these bear pun names.
Yeah, it's a little out there. I'm sure it'll come to me one day, but then he also doesn't say buried near the North Pole. He says buried near the Northern Pole.
The Northern Pole, yep.
And I'm like, do they call it that in bear world? Is it called the Northern and the Southern Pole? Like, it just I don't know why, but that really stuck with me.
I have to, and of course, whenever you talk about North Pole and South Pole, I have to wonder, is there a Bear Country Santa Claus?
Because we know that there is a Bear Country Santa Claus.
Oh, is there? Okay.
Oh, they've met Santa.
Oh, that's... Okay, so Phil, I have a quick question for you. Is Bear Country Santa a bear?
Yes.
Okay, because I think you may have commented on this when I posted on this. One of the things that freaks me out on Peppa Pig is that everyone's an animal except for Santa Claus and the Queen.
He is also not called Santa Claus.
Oh.
He is called Santa Bear.
Oh, yes. Now, that ring does ring a bell.
Yeah, so it is very much like their own version, like,
okay,
as our Santa Claus is a mixture of like Catholicism and like Catholic iconography, as well, like married to like these sort of like Pan-esque caricatures, like, and it's like, as our Santa Claus is a mishmash of a million different traditions,
including Coca-Cola advertising.
Right, their Santa Bear is also a mishmash, but traditions that come more from the bear side. Like, I'm sure, like, the, like, because, you know, like, how they have, like, they still exist, coexist with like Big Paw and
right,
and creatures like that. So I'm sure they have their own pagan-ish beliefs that feed into their Christian beliefs,
right,
and meet somewhere in the center. So yes, he is Santa Bear. He is not Peppa Pig's, like, Walker Between Worlds Santa Claus
right,
that some cartoons do.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, I just want to. The Peppa Pig, like, two humans in a world of talking animals, has always bugged me. But I am glad to know about that. Bear Country seems like it is fully separate from our reality in all ways.
Yes, it is. It is another existence. It's part of the multiverse.
Right. To not even get into its own pocket multiverse that it exists within.
Right. 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 Yes. It's a multiverse that exists within a multiverse.
Right. It's bears all the way down.
Right. Except they're near the top when it was multiple different kinds of animals.
Right.
That slowly disappeared. Meanwhile, Ralph Ripoff.
Yeah. So Ralph Ripoff makes an appearance here, and, like, you kind of, like, so I was wondering about your opinion about this. So there's a quick moment here where Ralph Ripoff says, "Oh, this thing's going on. I've got an idea." And then kind of, like, you kind of get a clue of what he's going to do.
Yeah.
And then he disappears until the very end of the book again. Do you think, so editing a book that came out, you know, more than 20 years ago, do you think this would be better if this chapter wasn't here?
Oh, and it became more of a surprise?
Yeah, it came more of a surprise of what's happening at the end. Like, it's one of those things that it's so apparent what's happening later. But I think even if you just didn't have this moment, there would be more of a mystery. As the book stands now, there's no mystery.
There's no mystery at all. Well, we do get a mystery of, like, how did the document get from point A to point B?
Right.
But the only thing I can say is without this this, like, little, like, incident in the book, we would lose our introduction to Gail Goodbear.
True.
And Bear Country's version of Tom Brokaw, apparently.
Right.
Tom Bearclaw.
Sure. No, that you are right. We would miss out on some high class pun work, which I know is an important backbone for this franchise. So.
Right. What amazes me, though, and what this whole book brings up is that Bear Country, Bear Town, is a small town.
Yes.
It's basically a outer ring suburb of Big Bear City.
Right. And they acknowledge that. Like, they basically, like, when they find this thing, Dweebish is like, if we can get this authenticated and it's actually legitimately what we think it is, this will put Bear Town on the map. Like, he basically is, like, admitting that they're kind of in the boonies.
But if their school used to be the meeting hall
right.
of the fathers of their nation.
You would think that they
wouldn't it already be on the map?
Wouldn't it be known? Yeah, like, if Philadelphia never developed into being one of the major metropolitan areas of America.
Exactly. I mean, or, so again, going to, like, my hometown, like, I'm from Spring, Texas.
Okay.
But there is an area outside of our town called Old Town Spring, which was, like, the original Spring.
Sure.
That then people moved away and, like, the industry started building up, and then Spring proper sort of built up just outside of it. And I'm wondering if Big Bear City was what used, like, Bear Town became Big Bear City. And, like, Bear Town is kind of like the little, like, oh yeah, that used to be the center of everything, but now, like, Big Bear City is where it all happens.
But in your analogy, people still knew that. Like, it wasn't like that was something that was
right, a secret.
Like, there are historians who have, like, clearly, like, kept up with, like, this history. So it's not like all of a sudden you're like, oh, Bear Town's where all the important things happened.
No, that's true. And I just wonder, like, if this literally was the actual meeting room and they knew it was the meeting room, they're like, oh, right, this used to be the meeting room. Then why had no one ever gone through that bulletin board before?
Well, they never had a principal's conference all about tidying up, so.
That's true. It took, after 200 years, someone had an efficiency conference.
Yes.
So it's up to Gus to chisel the notice off of the bulletin board.
Yes. Yeah, so they have to chisel it off of there so that it's safe, and then they're sending it off to be authenticated through this elaborate system.
It is an elaborate system, and this is like the kind of the brilliance of the book, where it's almost a locked room mystery, because they're like, all right, we're setting this up. The document's being placed in like a bulletproof briefcase that is going to be handcuffed to Mr. Dweebish, mm-hmm. and it will not be unhandcuffed from Mr. Dweebish until he returns with the authentication, authenticated.
Right.
So if anything happens, it has to happen. Oh, and he'll be chauffeured to and from in the back of a squad car by Police Chief Bruno.
Right. It's, as Brother says, it sounds like a perfect plan.
Also, he's not going to Big Bear City. He's going to Bearville.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
I think this might be the first appearance in these books of a place called Bearville.
You're running out of suffixes and prefixes to name bear places. You have Bear.
Oh, wait, no. Bearville did appear, sorry, listeners, in The Haunted Hayride.
Okay, there you go.
We made reference to Bearville in The Haunted Hayride, but still, Bearville.
Like, is there a Bearburg?
There probably is.
Bear Sylvania?
There better be.
Yeah. No, that's where Bearcula lives.
It looks like there is a Bear Sylvania.
Now you're having to think if there's... Has there ever been a vampire bear?
Oh, I see. There's a Bear Sylvania, but it's part of a different thing. And it's... There's like a series of like figurines you can buy for like decorating like at Halloween that are all in bear like...
Gotcha.
Teddy bears, and there's one called Bear Sylvania.
There we go. All right.
Sorry, everyone. Didn't mean to get your hopes up.
I like that you're doing your like real-time research on this.
I've got to. These questions keep popping up.
Yep. All right. So they enact their perfect plan, which Dweebish seems very excited about this whole process, that he's going to go to this person who all of a sudden popped up who can do authentication over in Bearville, and they're going to do this. He's going to have it handcuffed to him and take it directly to the person, and what could possibly go wrong?
He literally says at the end of the chapter, what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, he says, thanks, Cubs, but I don't need it. Nothing can go wrong.
And then the next shot is the bears worriedly looking out a window.
Right. So, yeah, so Mr. Dweebush goes off, and the bears, like, I know that it has to be them because it's the series about them.
Yeah.
But the Cubs, like, involvement in this plot at all is very thin.
Like, yeah, well, until they're deputized.
Yes, exactly. Well, even then, like, they don't, like, they find it, and then they do the thing later where they try to, like, switch it out. Like, that's the, like, active, like, proactive things they do. Everything else, it's conversations between adult bears.
Like, it really is.
Like, this is barely a story about the Cubs at all.
Well, what happens is the notice gets put back up on the bulletin board.
Right.
And it's Ferdy Factual who recognizes that the signature on the bottom is different from the authenticated signature.
Right. And I can't remember how late it is, but yeah, he looks at it and he immediately recognizes something's up with the signature. It's not the same. I think this is a phony, which they're all like, but how could it be a phony?
Right.
They figure out that the way that they know it's fake is because part of the signature was finished in a fountain pen.
Right.
Not with a quill pen as it would historically have to have been.
Yeah, it's this like, and they show a picture of what it looks like, and it's rather inexpertly done.
Right. Also, yeah, anybody who would look at this thing, it's not like it's like hard to tell what happened.
But Ferdy Factual sees it, and of course, like, no one believes him.
Right. Because no one likes Ferdy.
Yeah, it's like, he's the worst person to have on your side.
Right. Right. He's the last person you want to be right about anything. So the moment he sees something and is blabbing and complaining, well, actualing all over the place, you're like, no, shut up. I don't care what you have to say about this. So no one believes him. But for whatever reason, I'm trying to remember why the bear detectives decide to investigate after all.
Well, because they are the goody two shoes and the do-gooders of bear country.
Yeah, I guess they decide if there's as 1% possibility it is a fake, they need to at least investigate into it.
And so they deputize Ferdy into the bear detectives.
Right, with the great short deputizing oath that they have to take,
which is a running gag in the books, which I think they've done once or twice before, where they deputize someone into the bear detectives. It's an incredibly short oath. It's I, Ferdy Factual, do solemnly swear to work my hardest to solve every case. And whoever does the oath is always like, is that it? And I think sister always says, we're not making you president of Bear Country. this is just a bunch of kids pretending to be detectives.
Right. Well, in addition to that, they also require the help of Too Tall.
Right.
Because they're going to have to break into the school. And none of them, of course, know how to break into a school. But who absolutely 100% would know how to break into school? Too Tall.
Well, of course, and it says right here, the deadbolt on the back door was no match for Too Tall.
Yeah.
We don't know how it was no match for Too Tall.
Right.
It doesn't go into any detail.
Because he then disappears from the story. Like,
he really does.
Like, they basically use Too Tall to get in, and then after that he's like, see ya, because I'm not a detective, I just like breaking into school. So then
yeah,
he just exits the story.
But yeah, so they use it. What is it called when in a group of thieves, who is your break-in person? Like, there's a name for that.
Oh, I don't, I've not planned a heist recently, so I'm not sure.
Oh, come on.
Who that would be. My thing always is, if there's ever a heist, I want to be the getaway driver, only because I like driving down windy roads.
Yeah, unfortunately for the Cubs, none of them can drive.
Right, yes, they don't have a getaway driver. I'm sure Too Tall can drive.
Uh-huh.
He seems like the kind of guy who's boosted cars and figured out how to get it going.
Well, and his dad does own an auto graveyard.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. They should have had him stick around to be their getaway driver.
You're right.
But he would just ditch them anyway.
So they break into the school, and they discover that it has been forged. It's a forged document.
Right. So not only do they have a forgery, but that means if this is a forgery, the original document has gone missing. So now they have to figure out what are they going to do to try to get it back.
And what they do is they leave the school and are caught by the police.
Right. Right. It's one of those things where, like, they would have gone to the police anyway with this information, but they get caught, I think, just so the cover of this book makes sense.
Well, and what I love is in any other one of these books, they would have been caught by the police, explain what happened, and Police Chief Bruno would have been like, ah, the bear detectives did it again. But instead, they go to jail.
Right. I do love the moment. So basically, Chief Bruno's like, you're trying to steal the document. And they're like, it's a fake. And he's like, nonsense. And then he's like, handcuff them. And Officer Marguerite is like, they're children. Why? Like, why do we need to handcuff them?
I'm like, Chief Bruno, these kids have busted up drug rings. Like, these children have helped you out of many a jam. Please don't put them in the back seat of the car.
Right. Nope. I think that the book actually uses the term paddy wagon.
But yes, they get taken to jail. And as it says, it was a nightmare.
Right. Yeah. So you have this picture of all the Cubs, all five Cubs crammed into the back of a police car.
Which can't be safe. Like, they can't be buckled in.
Right. Well, I guess just the force of all of them together is creating enough tension that
right.
None of them, if there was an actual wreck, none of them would move forward.
Right.
So,
well,
and then the very next picture is all these Cubs being marched into a jail cell. All the Cubs get arrested. They call Mr. Dweebish just to check to make sure if their insane story could have any merit to it.
And he comes bursting into the jail, and he's like, yeah, this was forged.
Yeah. Takes 2 seconds to look at it. He's like, yep, this is clearly a fake. Yeah. And so, so you were saying earlier that it's kind of a locked room mystery. But then he says, do you remember how Max McFlourish, that's the authenticator, asked us to wait outside his laboratory in the antiques room while he authenticated the document? He said he couldn't work properly without complete privacy. He was alone with that document for hours. I'm like, your mystery is solved. You know the one place it would have been. Like, you know it was authentic before, or you knew what you had before it went in there. It went in there, and then when it came back out, it was this fake. You know where it went.
Yeah. And then they run a computer check on Max McFlourish.
Right, which immediately shows up this other name, Fritz Braun, also known as Fritz the Forger.
Also known as Fernando Fericio, Marcus McFur, Max McFlourish.
Right. Also, I love, so this book does so much lampshading that I adore, where they're talking about, so the whole thing is that he broke his quill pen, but he couldn't leave the room or else they would be suspicious of what was going on to get another quill pen. So he had to use the fountain pen to fix it, which Chief Brito says he'd have to be awful dumb to just have one quill pen handy for a big job like this. Which is one of those things where, like, the premise is, like, immediately undermined by saying that our mystery is dumb. It immediately, like, says, yeah, we know that this doesn't make any sense, but please just stick with us.
But here's where things start making even less sense.
Yes.
Because he's a known associate of Ralph Ripoff.
Yep.
So they're like, oh, of course, Ralph Ripoff's involved.
Right.
And so they follow, the police chief is like, well, the Bear detectives are on the case. Yes. I guess I better ask them to come with me to apprehend dangerous criminals.
Yes. I mean, as you said, that is the modus operandi up until this point. So it's not like he's going against his better judgment. This is typically what his judgment is.
Right. And so they tail Fritz and Ralph to Squire Grizzly's estate.
Oh, right. Because that was the other thing, is that we've learned earlier that Squire Grizzly likes to buy like antiques. Like, he's into buying just anything, but he likes to buy these historical artifacts.
Yeah. And, but they're even like, wait a minute. Like, the squire is not going to get mixed up in, like, theft.
Also, let's talk about that real quick, because they keep referring to him as the squire.
Yeah.
Like, that's not, like, it's not like he's the baron. Like, squire is not, like, an official title, I don't think. Isn't a squire just someone who assists a knight?
Is it? I don't know, like, as far as, like, titles go?
Yeah, like, that's what I thought. Now I'm going to have to do some research here real quick.
In contemporary American usage, squire is the title given to justices of the peace, which he isn't, or similar local dignitaries.
Okay, so is squire not even his name?
I don't think we ever learn if he has a name.
Right.
But I think because he and his wife are Squire and Lady Grizzly.
Okay.
I'm assuming that, in earlier years in the U.S., the title Squire was given to Justice of the Peace. It also used to mean Justice of the Peace. The connection to attorneys appears to evolve from a time when squires meeting to negotiate a duel would resolve the dispute. And I think now he used to be a lawyer and he got rich that way.
Right. Yeah. And so now he's just a generally rich person.
Right.
Okay. Anyway, sorry. It was just one of those things where, like, when they kept referring to him as the squire, I was like, wait, because I always just assumed squire was his name. I didn't realize it was, like, a title. Like, you mentioning, like, that his wife is Lady Grizzly, I was like, oh, yeah, I guess that does make a certain sense. But I've just never heard squire used in such a way.
Well, better get used to it.
So, yeah, no, it was just that just threw me. Anyway, sorry, I'm getting off on a tangent. But
here is where we learn what money can get you in Bear Country.
Yeah, it could basically get you the equivalent of the Declaration of Independence.
And it can get you off for basically stealing the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, so let's break this down. The end of this, basically the end of this book.
Yes.
So the police bust in. They see a crime taking place where this stolen document is being sold to Squire Grizzly.
Literally, there's Squire Grizzly, there's Ralph, there's Fritz, there's the stolen document on the table.
Right. Like, talk about being caught red-handed. There's, like, no wiggle room for getting out of this situation, right?
Right.
Right. So then, okay, you might have to help me walk through this because it makes no sense, Phil. It makes no sense. So they come in and they say, hey, everyone's under arrest. This is all, like, out so many crimes. So Squire says, they're here authenticating a document from my private collection of historical artifacts.
Yes.
To which Bruno says, that's not true. That's Ralph Ripoff. Because, so clearly a crime is taking place. Because Ralph Ripoff does nothing but cause mischief and crime.
Right. So Squire Grizzly could claim ignorance.
Right.
Except for the fact that he's dealing with a known criminal.
Right, and his known criminal associate.
Yes.
And so he says... sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm so confused. But I've read this like three or four times, and I still don't understand the process of logic here.
So Fritz stole the document.
Yes.
He switched it with a forged document.
Right. No, that's what really happened. I'm trying to figure out what their
Right.
story is.
So their story is that, so Fritz is like, don't worry, they'll never prove we stole this document. Into Ralph's ear, he says that.
Right.
And he's like, we didn't steal the document. Squire Grizzly will back me up.
Right.
And Squire Grizzly's like, Max told me, because Max is Fritz, that he'd been contacted by a forger who had stolen the Grissington document for a well-known collector.
Okay.
But when the forger went to hand over the document and get paid for the job, the collector got cold feet and backed out.
So everyone, even in their alibi, everyone in the room knows
That it's
that
stolen.
it's stolen, that it's a
And then Squire Grizzly says, so the forger offered Max half the money if Max would find a buyer for him and authenticate the document for the buyer. Max got my name as a potential buyer from Ralph, who's an old friend of his. I asked how I could be sure the document he had was an original, not a clever forgery. And he told me the last three letters of the signature of the forgery had been written in fountain pen. And so I went to Bear Country School this afternoon, examined the signature with a magnifying glass that satisfied me that that document was a forgery, and I was about to purchase the original. That means that Squire Grizzly was no just admitted that he was knowingly buying stolen. All he had to say was, "What? This was stolen? I had no idea." Instead, he's like, no, Chief. These guys are on the level. I know for a fact this is stolen property they're selling."
Right, they're not thieves, they're just fences. Like, that's what he's basically saying. It's like, no, they're on the level because they didn't steal this thing. They're just selling me known stolen property.
Also, I am now guilt implicating myself as a purchaser of a known, not just stolen property, a stolen historical document that would ordinarily be on display in the Bersonian Museum.
Right. And then Chief Bruno says, didn't it seem odd to you that a forger would be telling you that someone else forged this document? Which said, really all I cared about was getting the thing. Like I didn't even stop to think about that.
And so the chief says, you still knew the document was stolen and you were going to buy it anyway, period. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. And I'm like, no, you ought to be arrested for attempting to purchase a stolen historical
In
document.
his defense, the squire is ashamed.
He is ashamed. He does put his head in his hands.
Says, my passion for historical artifacts turned to greed, and I let my greed persuade me that because the document has already been replaced with a first-rate forgery, it would never be missed. I had the original all to myself, I thought, and no one could get hurt. So like all along, he's like, yeah, I was gonna commit this crime, and I like even though like they had like this sort of like half alibi, I still didn't even give it a second thought. I just wanted the thing.
And he says, and here's where Squire Grizzly's weird moral compass is. If I can figure out this paragraph, it means that he's saying, I got so wrapped up in what I wanted that I can't figure out what he's saying. He's just basically saying, I can't believe I let this historical document slip through my fingers. Like, there's nothing else. Like,
No,
he's just like,
what he's saying,
he's just disappointed.
he's saying that he was so wrapped up in wanting a thing that he didn't think of the implications of how he was getting it. But that doesn't mean, like, feeling sorry that you're about to commit a crime does not mean that you didn't commit that crime.
Right. Even if you get stopped in the middle of committing a crime by the police, that doesn't make you innocent.
Right, yes. I think that maybe that's the thing. It's like, hey, you're about to do something illegal. You should feel bad. It's like, I do feel bad. It's like, all right, well, end of that conversation.
And I'm like, Police Chief Bruno, that is why the word attempted exists.
Right.
That is why there are crimes called attempted this or attempted that. This was attempted like purchase of a historical document.
Right. But they turned all of their interest over to the other two known criminals rather than the, I guess, well-meaning. Like, it's not even that he had like good intentions. He just wanted it. Like, he just wanted the thing. It's not like he was like gonna get it and give it to the Bearsonian or anything. Like, he just wanted the thing, and didn't think about the implication of like where it came from.
But wait, things get even worse.
Yes.
Because the forger himself is like, I didn't do the forging. It was this other guy. And Police Chief Bruno's basically like, well, we can't prove he did the forgery. So I guess you're free to go on that. We just have you on steal. Like, we just have you on possession, basically.
Oh, Phil, we're like, I talked about earlier about things being highlighted. Everything on the next two pages.
All right.
Everything. So yeah. So he basically says, I didn't steal it. This other guy, Phil Grzynski, did it. And he's like, and Bruce Bro's like, well, I know that name. And so there is some possibility that Phil Grzynski could have done it. I'm like, how? Like,
right.
Like, going back to their own other thing. Is like, they're like, yeah, we knew it was good when it went in, and then, or we knew it was the real document when it went in to go to get authenticated. Then when it came out, it was no longer the real document. You know for a fact, unless the forgery already existed and was given to him, like, there's no logic even to his alibi. But
right.
But Bruno's like, you have come up with another possibility. Ergo, reasonable doubt has been evoked.
Yes. So Chief Bruno's like, this Phil Grzynski lives pretty far away. There's no way of proving what he does or where he goes. I guess I guess that's it. We can't prove that Phil Grzynski didn't do it. So I guess that's enough reasonable doubt.
Right, because we can't disprove their theory. We have to, like, assume that we won't even be able to, like, we're not even going to go to trial. We're just going to let them get away with this part of it. We're going to arrest them for trying to steal stolen merchandise, but we're not going to arrest them for the greater crime of actually stealing the thing.
And if you know anything about the concept of reasonable doubt, that is not up to the chief of police to determine.
Right, absolutely. Okay, so that leads into maybe my favorite part of this book, where they're trying to explain this whole thing to them. They're trying to say, we can't disprove their theory, and we need more evidence to prove ours. Evidence that even a thorough police investigation won't turn up. To which Fritz says to Ferdy, for reasons I don't understand why he's talking to Ferdy when he says this, he says, you see, son, even your chief of police agrees with me. And then he winked. He winked at me, cried Ferdy. I did not, said Fritz calmly. I just had something in my eye. There's this whole thing where they basically say someone winking at someone's not evidence. I'm like, that's beyond the point. Like,
right. What is the point is that the chief of police just said, we need more evidence, evidence that even a thorough police investigation won't turn up. And I'm like, no, a thorough police investigation should turn up some evidence. That's the definition of a thorough police investigation.
If nothing else, if you could talk to this other forger and you'd be like, no, I didn't do that. You at least have his like testimony against these other bears.
Go to Fritz's shop. Yeah. Oh, look, there's a pen. That is, oh, look, this is the same kind of ink. Oh, look, here's evidence of his other forgeries. There, you can investigate a crime, Police Chief Bruno. That's what detectives are for. Not children detectives, but detective detectives.
Well, and you know what? I mean, really, though, Phil, it's all a moot point, because how could the police chief come up with anything that would defeat the ironclad arguments of Fritz's lawyer, Bombastic Bearskin?
Bombastic Bearskin.
No, Phil, I need you to make me a promise here. As friends, if there's ever a book where Bombastic Bearskin is a character in the book, you will call me up immediately and let me know.
I will get right on the phone.
And let me know which book I need to buy 5 physical copies of.
Bombastic Bearskin. That's a real name.
Yeah. No, it's not.
In Bear Country, it is.
I think Bermuda has a new competitor for most ridiculous name.
That's the bear equivalent of a human being and being named like Loud Fleshman.
Oh God! Like I saw it, and I was like, and they mentioned it about a couple more times. I'm like, no, you can't name a character Bombastic Bearskin.
So this last chapter is where we get this completely wrong-headed lecture about reasonable doubt.
Yeah. And yeah, so all the cops are very disappointed, as am I and you, from the sounds of it. And they're like, man, this all seems like hogwash. I'm trying to keep my language PG here, Phil. But this book made me very upset. So they're all like, man, this is nonsense. They should be arrested for the crime that they clearly committed. To which Mr. Dreamish was like, well, we in Bear Country, we have a concept called reasonable doubt. And it actually protects people under the law. I'm like, yeah, but there's no reasonable doubt here. Like, reasonable's in the thing.
Plus, it protects people in trial.
Right, exactly. Yes, this is not up for the police to make a decision. It's up for a jury or a judge.
Right, first you would send it before, like, what, a grand jury?
Yes.
And they would determine whether or not there was enough evidence to take this to trial. Then it would go to trial. Then the jury would decide if there was enough evidence or reasonable doubt to determine it one way or the other. That's how the court system works. That is not, well, it's not for the chief of police in a podunk town to be like, I don't know.
seems reasonable to me, but also I deputized children that I arrested 5 minutes earlier, so what do I know?
Right. Remember in the movie Fargo when Marge Gunderson decided there wasn't enough evidence to take in the killers and just let him go because she was afraid the jury would find them innocent?
Right.
Remember when that happened?
God.
No, you arrest as many people as you can, and you let the court sort them out.
Right, yeah. Yeah, like, it's one of those things where it's just so infuriating because it's so, like, it's one of those things where, like, it's clear, like, when you get to the chapter, like, oh, this is the message you're trying to teach, but it's wrong. Like, it's like, top to bottom, not how the situation would play out, and you're trying to basically say, isn't reasonable doubt such a great thing? It's like, it is a great thing, and it's a backbone of our justice system, but you're not implementing it correctly in this example that you're giving.
And, right.
And you're also showing how reasonable doubt can be frustrating, like, while you're making your same point.
And then he has the gall to drag George Grissington's name into it.
Our forebears.
Yes. He's like, this is what George Grissington and our forebears are, you know, established this country to mean, is reasonable doubt.
Right. So, yeah, so that all the, and then it's just this thing of, like, they're going through all this. And I'm like, there must be some way. And, like, I knew from the percentage that I had left on my thing, I was like, this book's about to be over. Is this can't be how this book ends. And it is.
Yep, because you turn the page and you're like, oh, right, the rest of this digital book is the first two chapters of the next book.
Right. So it goes into this thing where they're talking and all of a sudden Gus shows up and he's like, that's true. And it's like, what are you doing here, janitor? Get out of here.
Right, right. Who cares what the janitor thinks? Like, this doesn't have anything to do with you.
Like, it's just such a bizarre, like, it's like they were like, we need to write more words, but we have nothing more to say about this. Bring in this, like, Gus has something to say about this. Also, he has his name on his hat.
Yeah. Don't ever listen to the guy whose own name is on his hat.
Yeah. It's just such a, it is a book that I enjoy thoroughly.
Yes.
And also makes me furious.
The final shot though is of the bicentennial celebration. Bears are sitting around eating pizza, a very bicentennial food, I might add, hamburgers, pizza. And what's funny about this picture, and of course I love all the illustrations in this book, but sort of dead center of the illustration is, well, it looks like Brother Bear holding a balloon and looking worriedly up at it. And
yeah.
I'm like, what's this final image?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a whole other mystery going on here. Like, that feels like it's from another story. And then you get a little insert picture of the bears being a little freedom band. I don't know what the proper term for that is, but yeah.
Yeah, Ferdy playing the fife.
Yeah.
Brother on drums, sister on other drum.
Yes.
And the Bear Country's revolutionary flag,
yep,
flying behind them.
I like that brother and sister are in their, like, revolutionary style clothing, and Ferdy's just dressed like he normally does because that fits.
Yep, he refuses to change his clothes for.
Yeah.
He's not going to change his clothes for some old reenactment.
Right.
And that's it. I didn't even have a chance to talk about the fact that there's all the changes in the, like, if you change the name of the Delaware to Delabear,
yes,
that means that it was that Delaware was named after Thomas West, the third Baron de la Bear, instead of Delaware, which means that, like, that there's some sort of France involved here. Like, you just, as you change these names, you're like, Oh, you're affecting the history of the entire world here. And you're just raising more questions, Baron Staines.
Right. Well, and you've said before that Stan, like, just had this sort of sense of, like, almost animosity towards someone who would care about those kinds of things.
Oh, definitely.
So it's almost like he's like, who cares? I am very curious what he would have thought of the whole concept of your show.
He would have thought I was nuts.
Yes. Well, because I think he would have been very, like, honored that someone would, like, care enough to read his things, but also be like, you're wasting your time. I wrote these books for children.
Right. These are bear books. Just enjoy them if you're 10.
Yes.
If you're not 10, why are you reading them?
Right. Read one of my adult novels that I've written and never gotten published.
Well, I give the Berenstain Bears and the Perfect Crime parentheses, almost close parentheses, a big thumbs up.
Oh, 5 stars. 100%.
All the way.
It is the most fun I've had reading a book in a while. And it's like I said, we talked about this earlier. The fact that this story is like, it reads like a parody of the National Treasures movies, but again, was put out 10 years earlier. And it just like is bizarre to me that it like this very specific thing that is a parody and a joke and all that is just not like, it's not in reaction to anything. It's just a crazy idea that they had of like this historical document showing up being stolen. And then this like pseudo mystery around it.
So, exactly.
Yeah. Thoroughly enjoying, thoroughly, like, you know, well written. The illustrations are well done. Like it's a great little silly book that has the most bizarre ending of anything I've read in a long time.
It's just nuts. Well, the Berenstain Bears and the Perfect Crime Almost is available as an ebook, so you can go to Amazon or Kobo or Barnes and Noble or wherever you go to get your books, and you can pick up a copy there. It's just a couple of bucks. It's I think well worth the money for it. It's a hoot. It's nuts. It makes no sense, and you get so much wonderful bear country history. Now, Jamie, where can our listeners find you online?
Well, so we've been on a bit of a hiatus. I say we. I've been on a bit of a hiatus, but summer's come up again, so I am probably going to be striking up my Ninja Turtle blog at Cowablaga, which you can find at cowablaga.wordpress.com. Still not bought that URL yet, but you can check it out there, you know, and see me on an equally frustrating adventure through the Ninja Turtles television series.
A show that has its own problems with continuity and tone at times.
Yeah, and I made a reference to it earlier, but I did have one comment from a writer on Ninja Turtles. So if nothing else, that made me want to get back into it after school was out. So
that was super exciting.
That was very exciting and very cool. So find that little chestnut if you can. But other than that, that should be coming back soon. Next episode was the first episode to not have Shredder in it. So that's one of the reasons why I've been delaying writing that one, because it's such a momentous moment.
you gotta do all your research.
I gotta do all my research on the Rat King.
The animated version of the Rat King.
Yes.
That's exciting.
Yes, it's very exciting. So that should maybe be up by the time this is posted, but we'll see. So yeah, kyleblaga.wordpress.com for all your Ninja Turtle snarky needs.
Awesome. Well, you can find this show at berenstainbearcast.wordpress.com. You can find it on Twitter at bstainbearcast. You can write to me at berenstainbearcast@gmail.com and visit my Patreon site, patreon.com/deepinbearcountry. If you want to throw a couple of bucks my way, I'd really appreciate that. I'm also on 2 other podcasts, Click It Cast, a Beverly Cleary podcast that I do with my co-host John McCoy, where we've been going through the books of Beverly Cleary. And also It's Del Toro Time, a Guillermo del Toro podcast I do with my teenager Ollie, where we went through all the movies of Guillermo del Toro and are currently going through his Twitter recommendations list. I think we are about to drop next week or the week after Great Expectations, the David Lean movie. So if you're into classic Hollywood and the history of Hollywood, tune into that. You can hear me gab about that. Well, Jamie, thank you so much for being on my show again.
Oh, no problem, man. Like I said, it was a real trip to read this book and to talk about it with you and get all riled up about it.
Agreed. And for everyone else out there, I will see you all next time deep in Bear Country.